It may look ugly to him, but the counter-energy horse is the most likely, the most consistent place horse there is. Now, sometimes the counter-energy horse will be the show horse, but more frequently it's the place horse if you have selected the right group of contenders. Oh, I thought you were... Yeah, ooh, what have we been drinking here? Oh, elephants. Now, when I say counter energy, and Tom Brohammer will confirm this, Tom Brohammer used to always play his best sustained horse at early tracks in his exact back, because Tom knows the difference between sustained and you play the best late, but his late horse wasn't like 40 lengths off at the second call. He had the right mix and match, and he would play his best late horse always in a three-horse box in exactas. Back that was he was more of an amateur now. He probably just plays them one way now because they only come in one way. But back when he was, before he became famous, he used to always tell the classes that he used his best late horse. Now, with Tom, there's only four horses, and they were all contenders. Don't take the counter-energy horse. If you've got eight horses in there, and this horse shows nothing, but he has the most opposite energy. He's got to be a contender. He's got to be a horse that has the qualities to win, but he's counter energy. For instance, if your winners are coming from 69.80 early energy or median energy, you're looking for horses who are in the race, who are in the 67.90 to 68. Don't make up a number. You can always see your counter energy horse on your screen. If there are four earlies and one sustained, that's your counter energy horse, if it's a contender. The counter-energy horse creates more exactas and quinellas than you can shake a stick at. Our recommendation is a three-horse exacta box. I know that people say that we're sissies for doing that. It costs you an extra something to bet three horses. But you will not be coming in first and third, or second and fourth, or third and fourth, if you bet a three-horse box. And how many times have you not bet a three-horse box wanting to save money and say, oh, geez, that other one beat me? It'll happen all too often. Learn to identify the counter-energy horse. Spencer, run that last race in again. Would you dim the lights? I'm not going to belabor this because it's all written in here. And you've all read it once before. Get your engine screen, your cage end screen up. Huh? That same race you had. Yeah. I only want to look at one screen, two screens. Now, you don't need this computer program for this. You don't need any computer program. I mean, any program you have will get this. Gosh, TPR gets it real good. Okay, go back. Just make the two adjustments. Get to the cage. There you stop. Okay, folks. Tell me, who's the counter energy horse in this race? Now, wait a minute. Don't say he's counter energy just because he's alone early. Early is our model. Early is our profile. Who is the counter energy horse? You got it right. The sustained horse, Lynn, is. Now, had this been a sustained type of race, had this been a route where sustained was winning, then, of course, the counter-energy horse would have been real. Real, in if this were a longer race and you were looking for the early horse as a counter-energy horse, you would look at the early horse to get a big lead but then be defeated at the wire and only come in second. In this case, you're dealing with a sprint, and you're looking for the sustained horse. Why is that horse sustained? What's its third fraction? 31.85, right? What's its LEX? 32.45. What's its median energy? 67.55. It is the most deviant horse on the board, is it not? Read the numbers. Anybody not agree? Now, ugly, yeah. Jimmy had this trifecta, and at the last minute he said, well, you don't need that one in there, Howard. And I said, oh boy, I'm over the window right now. Just take that one out, and you got the trifecta. No, Jimmy, I think I'll leave him in. I'll go for four horses. He said, you can get down to three, just get rid of that one. Jimmy, I said, trifecta's 1-2-3, not 1-3. Now hit the other screen in case you had a little... if you can't understand, recognize that, here's your counter-energy horse. Put the two adjustments in. Hit the six. See the horse that hits the second wire first? In this case, the horse comes up two, but very frequently the horse will not come up the second best wind horse, and it'll only have that counter energy. Now go to the final readout to the deceleration graph. See, on the counter energy, see that last screen that we went by so fast? Hit it again, hit that six. Don't forget to hit the two. Okay, on our wind energy screen. Six. Okay, on that, now that's your wind energy screen, the first one that comes up. Now your counter energy screen. Who's first on the counter energy screen to confirm that that's the counter energy horse? Lynn. Lynn's the place horse. Now let's go to the very final screen on the... Let's keep hitting it till you get to the... Paradigm presser and that too, but here... Here's one I want to see. Folks, it doesn't come all the way up, but it's got 100 right here. See, if you want to know how to play exactas and you don't understand this concept, if you put in the right horses, the three 100 horses, or the three that are closest to 100 on this screen... If you play just those three horses and you don't know anything else in this world, you win at least 50% of all your exactas.
It's got 100 in the second fraction and 93.86.
Yeah, and the middle one is, the one with the middle 100 is a dynamite horse. That's the one that you've always got to have in an exacta, even if it shows nothing anywhere else, if you've got the right contenders in. Huh? This middle one, the horse, this, we can't see it here because it won't do. When you see 100 in here, that is the horse most likely to upset your apple sart, your applesauce, your cart, or whatever the heck it is. And it's the horse that will stop the other horses from having their projected third fraction. When you, the three 100 horses, the one you see that has 100 here, the one you see that has 100 here, and the one here. Now, in this case, there's no horse in this group with 100, but who has the highest? They're all about the same. But when you see one of them over here that's 99 something, when the others are under it, the closest to 100 in that final, if you don't get 100, that's your third horse in the exacta. Now we blindly win. Your boys, the ones who read the screen, do blindly win. Glenn Connolly, how's your exacta play with it, using that technique?
I really don't play them.
Nobody will ever make a shill out of you, will they? Anybody. See, we have nothing but honest instructors. Bruce, who plays exactas? Bruce doesn't play exactas. I had to put the set place horse in the half of his races that he put in this manual. Who's the king of exactas out there? Boy, you need this session then, don't you? How many of you are giving all your money back that you win on the wind horses back in the exactas? Folks, we're not going to talk here much longer. We've got to get off, but here's your answer. And turn the lights on, please. Somebody was asking why we did APVs. Why Howard did APVs and all the hot shots don't do it anymore. The high APV horse, if you're not an experienced, and I've got to qualify this, you've been listening to some real sharp handicappers today. I mean handicappers. And they utilize as few mechanical techniques as possible for several reasons. In the first place, It doesn't do much to a man's ego to say he depends on a machine. I, having no ego whatsoever, depend on a machine. But these other guys, they got this macho, and they don't want to say they depend on a machine. I look at the damn APV, because when I see... Tom, are you going to back me on this? You're a macho 100% guy.
100%, Howard.
Yeah, Tom uses that APV. Tom Renner, and look at him. He's a macho. But he finds he can go back farther for a pace line when a horse has an inordinately high APV, and it allows him to seek deeper in his pace line selection. So when you find that you've got a lock in a race and it comes in third, and you find out that the horse that actually came in first had 154 APV and this one had a 90.94, the one you thought was a lock, you'll know why. We like to tell you, those of us who depend on numbers more than the others, like to tell you that you should do your APVs until such time as your insight gives the necessity of these. High class and mediocre pace allows you to go back for a better pace. By the same token, that low class horse, that low APV, low class horse, who has an outstanding pace line, frequently comes in second, seldom wins. That's that ugly horse. It can't win. Tom, get a bike. Get a mic.
Well, I don't have that much to say. If I get up here tomorrow, I'll tell people a secret that I don't share with a lot of people about finding a place horse with APV.
Can you tell it now? We got Tom will give us 5 more minutes. Won't you, Tom?
Really?
get on the mic and tell it. We're on the subject now. They'll forget all about this tomorrow. They'll be on some new kit.
Well, I might forget it by tomorrow.
Yeah, you might forget it. Let's see.
I might change my mind.
I'm on page 126 right now.
When you do your APVs in class things, you take your top APV horse and forget him. The second highest APV horse. And then you take the others and divide it into that APV number. If you get a number of 1.4 or better, that horse will be your place horse about 80% of the time. I guarantee you that.
No, I'm only going to say it once. You listen, I heard it.
Ignore your number one APV horse, the one that's...
The mic's not on.
Well, I know that.
Oh, okay. That was loud.
Well, I'm giving you batteries, though.
Number one...
The number one... Is that better?
Yeah.
The number one APV horse.
Come over to this one, Tom. It works.
Probably
just like those football games.
Probably got that from Donahue or something. Take your number one APV horse and just ignore him. Because if you use him, you'll get an apparent number that don't mean squat. Take your number, your second best APV horse and your other APV numbers and divide it into that second APV horse. If it comes up 1.4 better, if you get a horse 1.4 better than that second APV number, he's a dead lock for running second. I'm good, I'll tell you that. I don't tell very many people this.
So, divided
by the other APV numbers. If you've got an APV of...
Let's get this. Do you add the others together?
If you've got an APV of... Your second best APV horse is like a 1.80. And I'll get that out of my face. A 1.80. And all the others are, 1.5, 1.4. Divide that into that 1.8. You're going to have a real high second APV horse. You're not going to get this 6 times out of 100. But it is a dead lock on a place horse.
All right, I didn't know that. Well, I'm glad I paid to come here. That's good, Tom. Thank you. Whether you do that or whether you just do it by your eyeball or you figure some little formula of your own, don't, if you're going to play exactas, don't ignore APV. Now, remember this. Here's your essential axiom. The contender second most likely to win, this is Jimmy's problem, is not the contender most likely to place except 28% of the time. In other words, the horse that is designated as the second most likely to win horse does place 28% of the time. Yes, sir. Yeah, it applies in everything. That's a statistic. It applies. Yes. Absolutely. So, if you were to play your two best horses to win exactas, you would win at a maximum of 28% of your exactas. You cannot survive on 28% exactas, which is what most of you who are doing it that way are getting. You will get, I promise you, if you put in the horse first most likely to win, the horse second most likely to win, and the counter-energy horse, and pay attention to these other little things, you will get 55% exactas. We, for many years, we get 54 to 56%, which rounded up playing just Quinellas in Las Vegas. And we have a couple of people in the room tonight. There they are over there, that lovely couple, who, they're waving a little hand there, who have followed this procedure and are doing very well winning trifectas. Some place has a house trifecta over here. They're doing very well. Yes, sir. Oh, you want, it has to be a qualifier. You just don't pick some counter-energy horse out of nowhere. It's got to be a horse that could win. Yeah, get it down to it being the top five. Always, if you get it down to four or five, well, four sometimes is too few because you change the energy balance. But get it down to five and you won't have any problems in life. Yes, sir. That's in here, too. The seconditis horse. The horse that loves to follow horses.
That's Jimmy how to do that.
Yeah, they bought, when Tom was still working for the phone company, they called him in and says, and kind of sternly looked at him and said, I understand you follow the horses. And Tom said, not me, sir. I follow horses that follow horses. That was when he was a loser. Okay, folks, it's been very nice, but in the show business, you always bring in the big star next to closing. And in show business, before the star goes on, the MC always lets the audience go to the bathroom because even the biggest star does not appeal to you much if you have to go. So we will adjourn for 10 minutes and then bring on Tom Brohammer.
22 in the small workbook. I want to go back to that profile again. I'm going to give you, we were going to spend a little time on it. It's really not necessary. We've spent enough time on some of these races that I'm going to give you something to do on your own because I think it's worth doing. I'll even give you the answer to the quiz, but I want you to do it on your own because it's important that we do it. Once I give you that to do, I want to talk a few minutes about sprinter route. I think I'm going to give you I want to tell you how I do it is what I'm going to do. Then it's up to you whether or not you want to do that. And then someone asked about route to sprint earlier today, and I said I will talk about that. Now, that ought to take us about 20 minutes, 25 minutes at the most. First of all, the assignment. On page 22, this part we'll do together, because we already did it today. Please look now at the 6.5 furlong profile. Now, for those of you that were at the racebook today, the data that I gave you for Hollywood Park early on held true again today. So anybody that was watching the races know that to be true. At six, the speed was okay, but at 6.5, 7, those distances not. But look at this profile again. At 6.5 furlongs at Santa Anita from that period of time up through the 18th, from the 4.192 to 4.1892, and there you'll find 3, 6, 9 sprints. At 6.5 furlongs, one closer, one kind of sustained presser, and the rest were all pressers. No one won on the lead. Now, the race that I want you to apply it to represents the biggest hit I had at the meeting, so I'm kind of proud of it, and I want you to see it, and I'd like you to share in it sometime. I'm not going to send you any of the money I made in the race, but I mean on your own. Pardon? Oh, I did nail a big one today, yes. I mean, obviously you've heard that. But anyway, this was much bigger, much bigger. And the race is the Santa Paula Stakes for three-year-old fillies at 6.5 furlongs. And as you look at this race, You'll also have the results available to you in the larger workbook. As you look at this race, try to identify anybody that's not going to be on the lead and anyone that won't be too far back. In other words, not now forget beaten lengths for a minute. Consider placement, because you'll see a horse in here called Getting Air that happens to be fairly close lengthwise but is behind most horses every time she runs. And you'll find only a couple of horses in here that are presser types. And the one I want you to look especially close at is Peaceful Road, who is 5-1 on the morning line. And you'll find that when you look at this, you'll eliminate horses like Jettin' with Kennedy, Captivant, and several others for class reasons. And you'll only have a few horses left, of which most of them are sustained horses. And only Peaceful Road and Ray Down Under representing possible pressers here. Peaceful Road pays $29.80, so I'd like you to get something from this. Forget the computer. Don't even bother to turn it on. Just try to anticipate the pressers from the race based on the data. And again, it's a case for making your profile and understanding it and being faithful with it. All right, that takes care of that. Sprinter route. This is a problem that has existed since day one in racing. It's certainly been a thorn in our sides all of the time. And I think the way I approach it, I think, is the easiest way to do it. And I kind of got at that a little bit today when we were talking about the stretch-out possibilities of that horse in Glenn Connolly's race, Silver Vein or whatever it was. When I said that if the horses that are sprinting in 112, 112, and 1 at Pimlico usually route in about this time. Now, one thing you have to accept the validity of a parallel time chart to some extent. But when it's the only game in town you've got for taking sprinters to routers, you're locked into using that. Now let me give you an example, and I think from that example you will get the idea. Let me see how much flexibility I've got with this mic. I'll use the other one. This procedure demands that you understand the $10,000 pars at your racetrack, which are not hard to obtain anymore, and the differences between, for example, a $32,000 race and a $10,000 race versus an $8,000 and a $6,000. I'm going to put two numbers on the board. I suggest you do the same thing on a piece of paper because this is not in the manual. I'm going to put, this is for Santa Anita, well, let's make it Hollywood Park. That's a little more fun right now. This is for the 6-furlong distance at Hollywood Park. The par is 22.2, which is 2/10, or 1/5, 22.2, 45.2, 1/10, and 2. Now, that's the $10,000 par, and we'll give that a value of 100 on a part-time chart, just like in the Quirin material for any of you that are familiar with it. Now, that's the way I construct my part-time charts. So let's say this is 100. Well, you're not going to be able to see this anyway, but I'm going to go through the exercise because I'll be more comfortable with it. At 8.5 furlongs, this is quite a board. Let's use 47, 111.6, or 111 3/5, 111.6, and 144, and 1, and that's 100. Yes? Those are intense. The fractions are intense. And one of the reasons I put them intense is because they fit a part-time chart better, because you don't graduate from one distance to the other as quickly as you do at final time. In other words, you have 45.1, 45.2, 45.3, 45.4, and the classes graduate usually by fifths as far as final time, the half-mile time being worth about half as much as the final. So this is intense. It's 22.2, 45.2, 1/10 and 2 in fifths. 47, 111 and 6, which is 111.3, and 144.1. Now, what I'm going to say to you is that you have a sprinter now. Yes. Let's take a sprinter that you're trying to stretch out. And suppose that sprinter runs 109.3. Damn this thing. I can't write anymore because this thing is worthless. Let's suppose the sprinter runs 109.3. No, that's all right. 109.3. Now, if 110.2 is 100, 109.3 is 104, isn't it? 109.3. Final times in fifths. 109.3. That's 4/5 better than 110.2, right? The figure for that, if you were to, if anybody that's got Thoroughbred Handicapping State of the Art, Bill Quirin's book, you'll find several sections on making these type figures. That figure for that horse is 104, right? 4/5 or 4 points better than the 100, which was 110.2. That's 104. Okay? What is 104 in a route then? 4/5 better than the 144 and 1. 143 and 2. That's a 104. So therefore, if you have a sprinter at Hollywood Park that sprints in 110, you can, if he can route, the basic question is, can he route? But if you decide he probably can, the figure then, the equal figure is then 143 and 4, if he was 110, right? If he runs 109, this is easy once you understand it. If he runs 109, that's 7 points better than a 100 or a 107, isn't it? In a route, then, that's 142 and 4. That is by far the easiest approach ever to stretching these horses out. The problem with any parallel part-time chart is that it varies from racetrack to racetrack. So the point in using it is it defeats the whole the game. But if you know what your pars are, let's step to a Golden Gate for a minute. 110 and 1 at Golden Gate is 100. 143 and 1 is 100. So if a horse sprints, say, 109 and 4, that's 2 points better than a 110 and 1, isn't it? That's a 102. Then you can expect the horse to route in 142 and 4. Everybody follow that? That's so much easier than having a sprint-to-route adjustment of, say, 2.25 or 2.40 in the Phase 3 material. That's a killer for you because the only thing it really adjusts is factor W. You're wrong in early and you're wrong in late because you need a little different adjustment for the both. So this is by far an easier way to do it. You just look at it and say a horse ran at Hollywood runs 111. He'll route in about 144 and 4. Yes? Always. When I project the sprinter into a route, and all of the routers are 105s, for example, which at Hollywood Park would be 143 and 1 types, I want that sprinter to be a 107 then. Okay? Because if you're going to take apples and oranges, and the oranges are running in the apples race, you bet apples. Okay. Now, does anybody have any trouble with this? Because believe me, it is so simple, and you just, once you get the hang of it, you just look at the race and say, at 7 furlongs, for example, a 100 at Hollywood Park is a 123 and 2. So horse runs 123 and 3. He'll route 144 and 2, probably. See how easy that is? I'm not making that up as I go. Those are the figures. And once you have the 100, you just do it. Now, let's suppose that the half-mile time, two ways you can approach this, and they're equally good. One of them is to develop the multiplier, which we've talked about before. Now, the multiplier will work on the internal fractions a lot better than it will on the final. Or, if the horse routes in 45 flat, can everybody see that that would be a 102? 2/10 better? All right, then that becomes a 111.4 over here, which is a 102. Anybody having trouble following this? It may not be simple at first blush, but it is so simple that it doesn't take any time. I mean, because I know how much time is involved in this handicapping, especially for you that are fairly new at it, that are trying to wade through the Phase 3 adjustments. This is all it is. That's all it's required. I'm going to get another one. I got a test for you now. At Hollywood Park, a sprinter goes 111.4. What do you think he might route at, just based on what I just told you? Outstanding. That's how simple that is. And you don't have to carry your parallel time chart around with you, because you'd have to adjust it from track to track anyway. All you need is a $10,000 pars. You can get them from Dave Schwartz. You can get them from Dick Mitchell. You can develop them yourself. But it's so simple that way, because I know how much trouble you've got. When you're trying to project a sprinter into a route, when you drop on that 2.5 or 2.45, it doesn't adjust anything except factor W correctly. And here you can adjust them correctly. Questions? Sure. One of two ways. You can use the multiplier, which we've talked about before, and that just means developing a number, which is 2-something, to multiply the second call by. Now, the way I do it is that suppose that this horse goes 44.6, or this race, not this horse necessarily, 44.6. That's 6 points, using tenths at the fractional calls, that's 6 points better than the 100, which was 45.2, right? That's a 106 then. In a route, a 106 then is 111 flat. So if the horse sprints, if the race goes in 44.6 sprinting, you can count on going about 111 routing at Hollywood Park. Now that changes with your racetrack. And believe me, it will solve a lot of the sprint to route problems for you. It really will. It certainly makes it a lot easier to lose the race anyway. I mean, at least you're not agonizing over the adjustments. If you put a sprinter in the can't route, you're going to lose it anyway, but at least it was easy to get there. Does anybody find that valuable at all? I mean, I saw one hand go up, so maybe I'm wasting my time here. Okay, all right. Because everyone I've taken to this adjustment has thanked me afterward because of the time saved. So I'd suggest spending some time with that. Route to sprint. That's detailed in the yellow manual, and that's still the way I use it for thoromation or anything else. Recognizing that if you're using phase one or some of these other programs, you're going to have an artificially high second fraction because of that artificially low first call in terms of point value. Everybody okay on that? All right, so you just have to recognize that you're a little distorted on the final fraction because they ran so slow to that first call. But it's the same thing. You just take the time, take 2/5 off the second call, take 2/5 off the first fraction. Just the same as the yellow manual recommends. For me, I've never found any reason to change it. One turn? You mean like a one-turn mile? Well, see, when I can't say yes or no to that. And let me show you why. Now I will take the other pen that was offered. The Hollywood Park no longer runs one-turn miles. But when they did, the first fraction in the one-turn mile for $10,000 was 45.6 or 45.3. That's the one-turn mile. The first fraction in the sprint, when they ran the one-turn mile, was 45.4, because they were using that other finish line, so they had the track was a little configured a little differently than it is now. So the difference then, or the adjustment to this route line, was to take 1/5 or 2/10, right? Now at Belmont, I don't know what the par is offhand at Belmont, but if whatever the par is what you take. I can tell you, if you want to know badly enough, I'll go look it up for you. Because I do have the pars across the country. I just don't have that on the top of my head like I do Hollywood and Santa Anita. So I can't answer that yes or no. It depends on the racetrack. Any questions? All right. Okay. All right. Use that sprint to route. Use it.
Not for me, for them.
Well, welcome, survivors. Did you ever notice that on Sunday morning there seem to be more chairs than there are people? some of the attrition rate is. Back when we first started this, everybody was young, and everybody came to all the sessions. They used to last sometimes till midnight at night. Now, as we grow older, I see more and more people are thankful for when we close. Used to be, hey, let's go on for another hour. I'll get my money's worth. Well, as we come, are there any Roman Catholics in the room who didn't get to Mass this morning? I'm authorized to give you absolution and remission of your sins. Huh? I am. I've got a ministerial license. I'm not a priest. I went to divinity school. They kicked me out, but I learned how to do absolution and remission. And, you know, it's just like doing a baptism when somebody's dying. It can be done, so I'm very serious. You're not sinned by not going to Mass this morning, but say some Hail Marys and count a little bead here and go twice next week. Okay? And take an aspirin and call me in the morning. That doesn't work. How many of you get newspapers that are wrapped in rubber bands? I'm going to do a little something here. I'm going to do a little something here that I would recommend for all of you who are not absolutely secure in your handicapping and in your wagering. I will venture to say that every one of you will have enough winners if you go in 20 race cycles and you thoughtfully apply everything that you've heard at this seminar, or at least much of what you've heard, whichever phase that you're using, and that your problem, and let's investigate this together, that your problem happens when you go to the track sometimes with your bets in your mind, all prepared what you're going to do, and then some strange thing happens to you. How many of you find that you win at home on paper and you get all excited about it, and then when you get to the track, you lose? Isn't that amazing? There are several liars, but almost everybody said that. Now, how many of you have relied on the old horse players, it's rationalization, that it works at home, but it doesn't work at the track? How many of you have said that? Now, those of you who have said that, investigate that statement. It works at home on paper, but it doesn't work at the track. And you hear that all the time. And you read letters in Phyllis Racing Newsletter, in Racing Action, in American Turf Monthly. People, serious people, people walking the streets, not in mental hospitals or anything else, actually saying that it works at home, but not at the track. Can anybody justify that statement? If something works at home, it's got to work at the track. It's the same thing, isn't it? You know who doesn't work at the track? The person who's saying it doesn't work at the track. So what is the difference? When we work a race at home, we are secure. We have no fear. We have no anxiety. We have no outside influences. We are in what we would call an adult ego state. We are full-grown, mature adults. However, when we get to the track, that little fear that comes over us, that anxiety that comes over us, what do we become? We become like little children, and we try to adapt ourselves to a world of anxiety and fear. That's when we don't work. This isn't working the same way it does. Now, you all know that. And we've talked about it before. Those are just words to make you think. Now, let's try to find something that will cure it. Let's all go and get some rubber bands. Now, this is called operant conditioning. It's a Dr. Skinner does this, and it's but we've been very effective for child molesters, which is about as close as we can get to alcoholics, narcotics addicts. What happens is that every time something disturbs you like this, you start snapping, and it's just enough to make it sting. So you're going to go to the window, and all of a sudden your mind fogs over. And all of a sudden the three and four horses are going about. You hear somebody standing up there and say that, I just talked to a friend of the trainer's, and he says, bet the seven. You walk up there, and when you had the three and four in your mind, you suddenly said, give me 20 across on the seven. And you think, was that my voice? Did I say that? And then you get home, and you have this, you look in your pockets, and you've got a bunch of old tickets. The back pocket where you hide them, you know. In the back, and you accidentally do that, and your wife says, what's that on the floor? And you wonder why you have all these tickets, and I didn't mean to be personal. What happened to the laugh machine we had then? This guy's going to take his place, I guess. So, and then you say, oh, if only I'd done what I said I was going to do. Anybody experience it? If I just bet what I said I was going to bet, I'd have been rich. Yeah. This is the simplest way to handle that. Every time you feel your mind fogging over, every time you feel that lack of security, that lack of comfort that you had doing it in your own home, every time that comes to you, snap yourself, make it sting. We've given out more rubber bands this last year. A rubber band overhead is very heavy. And they even make these things commercially with little tabs on them. And somebody sent me one. I don't know whether he was a child offender or what, but he had a supply of them he'd gotten from a psychiatric warehouse. But there's no sense buying them on the market with the tabs. They newspaper, look, see a little scar you get there? See, it gets a little red. And you come home and you look at yourself and say, boy, I must have had a hell of a day. My wrist is... Try it. It works. Bruce, while you're writing your questions, Bruce had a little extra to do last night. We wanted to make plenty of room for Brohammer and company at the end of the meeting, so we cut everything brief. But we've got a little time this morning before we do money management and the famous crossfire section. So, Bruce, if you want to do that one last race, because Bruce went to a lot of trouble to prepare this, and a lot of you wanted to have a kind of a one last race to go over to remember that this is about racing. Here's Bruce Jorgensen.
This is the portion where how I handicap a race, which many of the teaching members have done or presented. And so we'll do a little race that we played at Long Acres. Page 146 in your manual. And I'll just kind of zip along with it how I do a race. And the results are going to be back there another couple pages, so let's not look at that yet. Let's just stay right there in page 146, and maybe it'll be a little more meaningful. When I do a race, everybody, I assume, works up their own routine, for lack of a better word, of how you go through a race and you lay out a race. And I'll just kind of go through this race in that method, and then we'll go into readouts and et cetera. It's three-year-olds, and as you can tell, they're very lightly raced three-year-olds. And when I go through a race, I run down through all the horses, and I basically do three, four things on my first run through the horses.